What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm really happy that you tuned in today. Today we've got an exciting guest, Rosemary Kimball, and she's an environmental activist, a body paint artist, a voiceover artist. We've got lots of things to talk about today about environmental issues and how you can be more ethical in your choices of supporting the environment. So look forward to that. We're going to have a great conversation. And, of course, at the end of the show, we always have a wonderful transformative Peace Brain meditation. So please stay tuned to that. And as always, I open the show with a quote. And today I really liked this quote. It goes along with what we're going to be chatting about today. And it's from Mother Teresa. And Mother Teresa was asked, she said this, "I was once asked why I don't participate in anti-war demonstrations. I said that I will never do that. But as soon as you have a pro-peace rally, I'll be there." And I love that quote because it is truly about putting the energy on what we want and not what we don't want. That, you know, there are times for anger is a great motivation. It's a great emotion. It means that something's out of balance. But then look at what needs to get back into balance. How do we create, you know, this peaceful world? And, of course, that's what the Peace Brain Show is all about. It's about how can we create a better world that we're working together, that we're bringing things into balance, and that we're finding peace not only within ourselves, but within society at large and the way we use our environment. So today I have, this really lovely guest that we just recently met. I met her at a wonderful talk she gave about her work in Peru with macaws, and so I'm sure we'll be chatting about that as well. And she's just a dynamic lady. And so let me sort of introduce you to her, and then we'll bring her on. Her name is Rosemary Kimball, and she is an artist, and she travels for conservation. She's this wonderful nomadic lady who has just made the whole globe her world, her home. And she's an environmentalist, an activist, a body art and costume artist. She's trained as a voiceover artist and loves to do this for documentaries and particularly those about the environment. She makes costumes. I know she's worked with Mardi Gras, and she makes them ethically. And we'll be talking about that. And she also runs an entertainment agency and is a wildlife photographer. So many, many talents. Her website, you can find her at her main website, enrapturingentertainment.com. That's enrapturingentertainment.com, enrapturingentertainment.com. And then she also has a Facebook group called Feather Drop, for the advocacy and collection of cruelty-free feathers. You can just Google, go on and look for Feather Drop on Facebook and find her there too. So welcome, Rosemary, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thanks so much for having me, Gail.
It's just a delight. You are a dynamic lady, and I wanted our listeners to hear about what you do. So, As I said, I met you at a talk you gave talking about your work in Peru with checking macaw nests. So how did you get involved in that? Tell us a little bit about that.
So I'm interested in working with animals and doing conservation work, and I really want to do things where I feel like I'm making a real difference. And my interest in feathers led me to the website on the Tambopata Research Project, which is in Peru in the heart of the Amazon. And so as I started researching, I learned that there's a baby season where the researchers need to access the nests and that they would teach me how to climb trees to do that. And I just thought it would be a really wonderful way to experience the Amazon and see more of the animals and just spend time in nature.
So you said you learned to climb trees. Tell us a little bit about that. I think you were like really, really high up in those trees, right?
Yes, yes. I was between 70 feet and 120 feet in the air.
Oh,
and
my God.
And we were in these enormous trees. Yeah, just incredible. And some of these trees were over 400, 500 years old. And so as soon as I got to the project, they started teaching me how to rope climb to get up into the trees to get to the nest. And within about 4 days, I was trained and climbing.
Wow. So what did you do in these nests with the nests?
So once we are up in the tree, I have to get the baby chicks out of the nest and put them into a bucket, which gets lowered back down to the veterinarians who are doing measurements and checking the birds to make sure that they're growing properly. And the main reason for doing this is that they had started a what they call a translocation project. And that is when if two eggs hatch more than 4 days apart from the same nest, it's a very high likelihood that the second chick will not survive. So they came up with this plan of taking the second chick and putting it into a new nest with a new family and with another chick closer to its age of hatching. And it's going quite well. So the project is very successful. And so we have to monitor the chicks to make sure they are growing properly with their new families and they're getting the food that they need.
Wow, interesting. And I know you had showed a little GoPro video that you took as you were trying to have the mother macaw step aside so you could pick up the baby chicks and put them in the bucket. She wasn't quite happy, but you stay up there then after the chicks are lowered, and then when they're returned to you, you return them to the nest, right, with the mom?
Yes, yes. And typically the mom isn't there or the parents fly away, you know, when they see you coming, but this one particular nest, the mother was very protective, understandably.
Yes.
But they have very large beaks, and they can actually take a finger off, so... So to do that, we have to use a towel to kind of calm her and hold her down so she can't get to your fingers. And it's tricky because you're doing that while also trying to get the baby out safely into the bucket. So that was probably the most challenging of all of the nests.
Wow. And how many nests are they monitoring in this project approximately?
I think there were about 30 or 40, and it's an area where they do the research where there are a lot of macaws and a lot of different kinds of parrots, probably about 15 different species of just parrots and macaws, and they actually are in that area because there's a very large clay lick that they get their minerals from.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's lots of birds all over. It's a very... audible place. It's very noisy, but I think it's really fascinating to hear all the birds.
That's wonderful. So a clay lick is basically a wall of clay on rock that the birds come and lick off the minerals from the soil, right?
Yes. Yes, so many, many different kinds of birds were doing that, not just the macaws and parrots. And also we would see other animals there doing the same, like the peccaries, which are the wild boars, and all kind of different creatures go to the salt lick for those minerals.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you were fortunate, it seemed, to see many different species of animals in the forest. So it seemed like it was a very healthy forest. What are some of the other animals you encountered in your stay there?
Yeah, it's really remote, so that's why it's very healthy. There's not really any humans there except where we were. And I did get to see an ocelot, which was a life dream come true, to see a wildcat. That was most amazing. We saw jaguar prints all the time, but I didn't get to see a jaguar when I was there. I did get to see an anteater. It was, well, I was hoping to see one. I wasn't afraid. I really wanted to see one, but I was fine with the ocelot.
Right.
I saw an anteater, and it was a rare kind of anteater. It was kind of a blonde, smaller anteater. We were told that we were very blessed to see that animal. A lot of snakes, like really large ones. That was pretty neat to see. I love all animals, so tarantulas, caiman, the peccaries, you know, those are the big boar, and they're just foul smelling. You don't want to be around them for long. Monkeys, tons of monkeys, every kind, so many monkeys, like capuchin, spider monkeys, titty monkeys, squirrel monkeys, howler monkeys, lots and lots of monkeys. And I love monkeys. They're one of my favorites.
Wow, and then lots of insects. I think you saw some really interesting ones that maybe don't have a name.
Exactly. As we know, the most diverse place in the world for insects. There's more insects than anywhere in the world in the Amazon. And on my last day there, I saw this insect that was, it was shaped like an elf shoe. It was green, and it was the most unusual looking thing. And I have no idea if that's been discovered yet or not.
Wow. Fantastic. What a great, great experience. So that was, how long were you there?
I was there for 2 months.
Wow. Wow. That's fantastic. So what got you involved in this animal activism, this environmentalism? How did you start to walk that road?
So I've always been an environmentalist since I was really young. I've always loved nature and wanted to do everything I could to protect the environment. I quit using any kind of chemicals at a very young age. I realized the damage that I was doing. And I just come from a family of environmentalists, so it's kind of in my blood. And then I have been traveling my whole life around the world, and I love to go to natural places. And I've done a bit of activism work, but I recently realized that the best way for me to actually be an activist and help the world and the environment is to do some more hands-on work with helping animals and helping the environment. So this is one of the projects that I've done to go out and be of service.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think you hit on the key point here, and that's to be of service. It is important if we are aware of what we buy and what we use. That's certainly extremely important. And if we have extra time in our lives, and of course you've actually carved out the next year or the past, you know, years or so to do this work, which not everyone, of course, can do. But that's so important to go volunteer or to be at these actually hands-on places that are making a difference in the world. So, yeah, congrats that you've been able to do that.
Thank you.
So what gave you that opportunity? You were working, you're still working with EnrapturingEntertainment.com. Tell us a little bit. You were mentioning about Mardi Gras and the feathers to me before we came on the show.
Mm-hmm. So I always wanted to be an independent artist ever since I was young, and so I just started looking for what it was that I wanted to do, and I found, I started with found object art because I wanted to reuse things that I found in the street or in thrift stores, and so I was making found object art. And then I started putting them on mannequins, and I thought, hey, I want to do this on humans. So I started making costumes. And that led me to body art, because I wanted to add another layer to the magic of creating characters. Mm. And so then from there, I fell in love with New Orleans, and I moved there when I was 25 to become a costume artist. And I actually was doing well and getting on covers of magazines and being, you know, becoming a pretty well-known costume artist. And one of the main feathers that's used in Mardi Gras costumes, especially for the Mardi Gras Indians, are ostrich feathers, the really big, beautiful plumes that you see on so many things. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I was using a lot of those feathers. What happened was Katrina, and life changed, and I had to move. But soon after that is when I learned about what is actually done to acquire those feathers from the birds. And the ostriches are plucked alive, or they're cut. The feathers are cut, like, at the nerve, so they bleed a lot. And it's a horribly painful process that I saw a video of once that was traumatizing. So I realized, like, I just can't work with these feathers anymore. I can't do it. See, I'd always assumed, like most people, that birds molt. They naturally drop their feathers, so they're picked up and reused, but that wasn't the case. And when I started thinking about it, I thought, well, birds do naturally molt, and we can have these feathers and use them, you know, ethically, in a cruelty-free way. So I started an organization called the Feather Drop, and the point is to gather feathers from maybe pet owners or rescue organizations, from tropical birds as they collect them as they fall. And so I use those feathers now in costume art and headdresses, and I also donate them to other artists for their use. And now I'm an ethical costume artist.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That is the way that the world needs to go, to certainly create peace and harmony and balance with our fellow creatures here on the planet.
Yes, and these feathers are, you know, to find cruelty-free feathers is kind of rare, because people don't realize yet that they should be using those. So most any feathers that you're buying or finding anywhere, I would say 99.9% of them are not cruelty-free. So we really need to stop that trade and go in a different direction.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question, is how do we stop the trade? But, that's a huge, little by little, I guess, each artist or somehow advertising to that industry that there's an alternative, although it isn't as probably plentiful at this moment, although it could be, I would imagine.
I think it could be, because people who have these kind of birds for pets, just you typically throw those feathers away. And also, I think the first step is just educating people, because like myself, most people have no idea that those are not humanely acquired. So just letting people know.
Right. Do you have a main collection place? How can people get feathers to you? And then you distribute them to these places?
So on the Facebook page, there's information about where to donate your feathers. And with every donation, I make a piece of art for the bird owner from their bird's feathers as a thank you.
Wonderful.
Once I have them, and so once I have them, artists just reach out to me when they're looking for feathers. And there are a few other artists I'm connected with now who also are retailers of cruelty-free feathers. So it's a small movement. It's starting, but it's a start.
Okay. And even farms. I'm looking on your Facebook page of, you know, chickens, ducks. I guess those... You know, do you ever go to farms that will, what happens to the feathers when they actually use the chicken and slaughter it for meat? Can you acquire those, or have you gotten out to those?
I've gotten only to a couple of free range farms so far that were open to that. But the issue with that is it's a lot of space to cover. And apparently the birds do eat some of their feathers as well. So it's not that easy to find the feathers. So it's better for people to who have the animals to collect them and send the feathers to us.
No, I'm thinking about people who have their own chickens, that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And also people should know that the feathers, the only feathers that are legal to own are those that are, in this country, exotic birds are legal to have as pets. But if you were to go to, say, Peru, where the bird may be from, it's not legal to own those feathers. And that's the same here in the U.S. Unless you're a card-carrying native, you cannot own hawk and eagle feathers. You can't own songbird feathers. And the reason being is because about 100 years ago, the fashion industry almost wiped out bird populations because they were just killing the birds to use on hats and things. And so a law was created to make that illegal.
Right, right. And unless you're, as you said, Native American and using them in ceremonies, it's not legal to have those native birds from the United States. Yeah, good point.
No, you actually have to be a card-carrying Native American, too.
Right, right.
You have proof.
Recognized. You know, Wow. So tell us more about your art. What other art are you, you're still doing the body art, you're still doing the costuming. What kind of industry are you working for besides what we were talking about with Mardi Gras, for example?
So most of my clients are, they come to me for private appointments or for parties and events. So I do a lot of face painting. I do a few festivals still with a lot of kids and families. But I've also started to take my art into conservation as well, as far as I'm starting to do artist residencies. And the first one I did was a couple years ago in Greece, where I did a mural in Lakos on the island of Crete. And the mural, I had done some research at the museum about the Minoan designs and was looking for things representing water. And I wanted to do a mural about water. And so I created this mural, and I wrote "Water is life" in English and in Greek. And then I painted a body in front of it. It's called camouflage body painting, where you paint someone in front of a piece of art
and make
them blend in.
Yes.
Yeah, so,
wow.
So I did that, and the Greeks had not seen much like that before, so they were quite interested in that. And of course, I got that idea from Standing Rock, because that was the motto behind the whole movement, was water is life.
Yeah, tell us about Standing Rock. You were there, I believe.
Yes, I went. I had been following it for months and posting on Facebook several times a day. I was just obsessed with what was happening out there, and because water is the most important thing for our survival. And Standing Rock was started because the Dakota Access Pipeline was being built through Native land, which is illegal. And also it was believed they didn't have the proper permits for that, which now has been proven. And they were going to build this pipeline across rivers that fed millions of people. And as we all know, pipelines leak. And so the movement was to stop that, to save the water. And so I finally just one day said, I have to go. I can't. I have to do something. So I went. I went to Standing Rock. I took a van load full of supplies to donate, thousands of dollars worth of supplies. People had donated and sent money so I could buy the supplies. And I went and was there, and I had planned to stay there for about 2 weeks. But when I got there, after a couple of days, I learned there was a very large blizzard coming, and it might be dangerous for me to stay there if my car were to freeze, you know, and it couldn't be moved for the winter. And I really, really wanted to stay. I did everything I could to stay. I thought of every reason. But then that night, I was just woken up and got the intuition that I had to leave the next morning. And so I listened to my intuition. So I packed my things, and sadly, I left with a lot of guilt. But, you know, Spirit protects me, and I listen to my guides. And 2 days later was when that the biggest altercation there happened. That was when, late at night, the protesters were on the front lines, and the Dakota Access Pipeline people were shooting water cannons at them and rubber bullets and some experimental bullets that actually had shrapnel. And one woman lost an arm, another woman lost an eye, and just knowing myself, I probably would have been on the front lines with them and could have been seriously injured. So everything happens for a reason, and I just had to follow my intuition and go, and I still have some guilt about that, but I know that that was just Spirit guiding me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's talk about your intuition, because I agree that when we tune in to our inner knowing, that inner voice, it really does protect us. It really is guiding us for what we're here to do. You, mm-hmm. I know, have studied or been on some spiritual journeys and studied some shamanism or spiritual ways. Anything you want to share with our listeners mm-hmm. about all that?
Yeah, so I, what can I share? I have been interested in shamanism my whole life, and when I travel, I'm always looking for the medicine people, you know? I want to meet them, and I want to learn about the culture and what's done to help people with healing. And I have been involved in the Red Road now for several years, doing Native American ceremonies, and I vision quest every year. I'm a sun dancer, and I just really support this work. I've been looking my whole life for the path, you know, of spirituality that I wanted to be a part of, and I was raised a Unitarian. I worked with Wicca for a while. I worked with ayahuasqueros that I brought here to the U.S. to do ceremony with ayahuasca for a few years. And I had been to some sweat lodges and checked out the Red Road, but it wasn't until I met my teacher that I realized that this was the path I really wanted to be on, that I most resonated with. And so a lot of my spiritual work I do in the sweat lodge and on Vision Quest.
That's beautiful.
So I just love shamanism and that whole path. I'm always studying it wherever I go.
Well, it sounds like you really, the earth, the Mother Earth, is really part of, so ingrained in you and your path on this life quest, you know, that you're
yes.
tuning into how to support her and help her be healthy and teach humans how to work with that as well. Good job.
Yeah.
So
it's so important.
How would you...
We've lost, you know...
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you go.
No, finish.
I was just say that we've lost that connection. So many humans have lost that connection to Mother Earth and to this planet, and I think that's why we have the problems we do in the world, because most people don't even go out in nature, you know, they don't have that connection. And if we had that, like we did originally, we would be respectful of her and understand that we're all a part of nature, that we're all related.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just
Fantastic.
Hoping that we can get back to that.
So you bring, I want to, I guess, throw in a plug for what we do, because it's right along these lines what you're talking about. And And if people want to go to tourismforpeace.com, that's my website, and World Peace Trails, the idea behind it is to do just what you're saying, is to create these little patches of nature, if you will, that each business, perhaps, or certainly zoo and aquariums, we work with zoos and aquariums a lot, can do this because they are outdoors already, have these outdoor spaces, and that we create these wonderful natural parks, if you will, peace parks is what I like to call them, within our urban environment, within our culture, that can be those harbingers of that connection to Mother Earth, where people can just go out and be in that natural space and hear the birds and feel the wind and have dialogue about how we can create a better world and do things more ethically with each other and with Mother Earth. So these peace parks are put together in by locations to create a trail, and then there are trails all over the world. So that's the idea that that we're coming from as far as the work that now we're doing. So it goes along with what you're saying.
So needed. Yeah, thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. So where else are you traveling to? I know you we're recording this a few days in advance because you will be in South Africa when this airs on November 14th. Tell us about your work you're going to be doing in South Africa.
Yeah, so I found this great project. It's called the Vervet Monkey Foundation. It's outside of Johannesburg. And it's a rehab program for infant monkeys that have been orphaned. And I've always wanted to work with monkeys. So I've also been in wildlife rehab before. And I love working with the babies and being a part of rehabbing to re-release them into the wild. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's a lifelong dream come true. And then after that, I'm going to France to do an artist residency and do an installation, body art, costume art piece about water conservation. So my main way of activism now is doing these kind of projects and going out and doing hands-on. And I feel like I'm really making a difference this way.
Yes, you are, Rosemary. So for anyone just tuning in, we're talking with Rosemary Kimball, and her website is enrapturingentertainment.com. And this is Gail Lash, is your host. So we are, you know, always the Peace Brain Show is about relating things to peace. So tell me a little bit about how you think that your work relates to peace.
Okay, so as I said, I've been an activist, and I've done a lot of protesting, and I was at a protest a couple of years ago in Santa Fe. It was to protest something they do in the square there. It's in a reenactment of when the whites took the land from natives, and I was standing there, and I was at the protest, and I just had this epiphany, you know, that this work is important, but it's about retaliation, and it's about anger, and people are angry, and they're there trying to stop something. But I just realized that it just takes too much energy to be a part of something that's about retaliation. And I just realized in that moment, I just can't do that work anymore. And all I could do was just stand there praying and stand in silence. And after that, I realized I just need to do more of the work that I have always been interested in, which is working with animals and doing art about conservation. And in those ways, I know that I'm doing it in a empowering and peaceful way that's inspiring, rather than a way that's about fighting back and retaliation. And I just now understand better that for me, the best way to make a difference in the world is through this type of work instead of retaliation.
That goes along with Mother Teresa's comment as well, that, you know, being on that anger end, doesn't really accomplish anything, but being on the peaceful end, where you're pro something, does. It's what we want to create.
Yeah.
So what do you think a peaceful world could look like? What would be, using your activism, using your conservation environmentalism that you are so involved in and active in, what could the world look like if we were to take steps in that direction?
Well, I think the first step is acceptance and tolerance of one another. I mean, if we could just respect one another for having different opinions or political views or sexual orientation or even how we pray, there's no one way to pray. We all have that right. It's a human right. And I think if we could just better respect each other for that, and just be tolerant that we each have our own individual way, and even about just who we are and how we behave and respond to the world, if we can just allow each other to just be, you know, I think that's the most important step. It's just tolerance and acceptance, really. I think also just being able to respect ourselves better and use words and language that's respectful of ourselves and one another. I think it was the Dalai Lama that said that when you're mean to yourself or abusive to yourself in ways, that's also a form of violence. So also I think the most important thing is to learn to love ourselves and respect ourselves so that we can in turn respect the other people around us.
Well said. Absolutely. I agree. That's so important. So it gets back to where I'm thinking of, not that everyone needs to have a religion, but certainly a spiritual component to themselves, to realize that we are this amazing biological being, amazing planet, and there's more to it. There's more, there's this spiritual dimension of each of us that exists, number one, and is connected, number two. And so my point being is that I think we get wrapped up so much in the physicality of life and the going back and forth to work and having to deal with the boss and go to the grocery store and, you know, do all the physical things.
Right.
That we don't stop and take a moment to just, as you said, either pray or be quiet or tune in to that inner guidance, that inner knowing, mm-hmm. that affirms that beauty and love that we can have for ourselves. Yeah, good job.
Exactly.
So what else, where else is on your bucket list to go? Since you have some time to travel.
Oh my gosh, my bucket list is huge. I would say everywhere.
Okay.
I would love to go to Borneo and see the orangutans. I would love to go to Bali because I am fascinated by animism and the worship of animals for religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
India, of course, you know. I'm also interested in indigenous people, so I love to learn about them and meet them in places that I go. Gosh, everywhere, really.
Well, you're right. The whole world has
there's no end.
Is fascinating, yeah. And I love that you're looking at it that way, Rosemary. That you have this, if you will, this sort of childlike wonder of every place I go is going to be fantastic. I'm going to look, going to have something new for me to discover. So you have this wonderful joy about you that I think we sometimes lose when we think about travel or think about other places than those that we're familiar with. So good job. I'll give a shout out to the guest that I had on my previous show, Jonathan Jennings from Health and Harmony, their company works in Borneo, particularly to protect the rainforests and the orangutans, using community-based solutions to illegal logging, to stop illegal logging. So you might want to check out healthandharmony.com or org.
Definitely.
See if you want to volunteer for them. So, yeah, that would be right along your line.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I'll look for them.
Gosh. So, what would you suggest to some young people coming up who maybe have this kind of explorative spirit or want to be an activist for the earth? How would you, guidance would you give them?
I guess my guidance would be that anything is possible. That's my motto in life, that don't think that just because you don't have the money or the means that there's not a way to do it. And don't feel like you have to go somewhere to do that. I mean, there's plenty of things that need to be done just locally. I was volunteering with Lifeline for a while and here in Decatur, Georgia, and they need help. They need dog walkers. They need, you know, people to just hang out with the cats and socialize with them. And there's so much that you can do that's just so easy, and it's really just right at your doorstep. But main thing is just believing that you can do anything, really, that anything's possible.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, we have to believe in ourselves and believe that we're supported. Again, gets back to that, if you will, that spiritual connection, or just having that faith that, okay, the universe is going to bring the right things to me and the right people and open the doors, and you just have to walk through them and pay attention. Pay attention when they open.
Exactly. And the other thing that kind of keeps me going is knowing that, I mean, with all the political strife and everything that's going on, it can be really a downer and really hard to see. But the thing that I just always remember is, you know, we're all spirit. We're just energy. When this life is over, where do we go? You know, it doesn't really matter, because we're going to be just energy. So that's kind of what gives me hope and keeps me going, is that no matter what's happening here in this world and all of these things, it's not going to keep me from, or my spirit from going and exploring and doing things in the next life or in the afterlife. Or we're just energy. We're all just energy.
I like that. And I have to comment that, you know, when I was in school, we were taught Newtonian physics, and that was good about the atom and the electrons that rotate, you know, and the neutrons and all of that. But it wasn't, we weren't taught quantum physics. This is my point. Whereas now, quantum physics, which does point out that we're all energy and that we are basically this, if you want to say spirit, we are just this energetic connection, and our thoughts create things. And so I hope that they're teaching that in school these days. I was in Wales recently, and I went into the Natural History Museum, and they had right there a book on quantum physics for kids. And I went, oh my God, this is fantastic. So I actually bought it.
That's great.
Because I wanted to see what they were teaching the kids. And so we have to understand that actually this spiritual component of who we are is science. You know, it has been proven that we are this energetic, sort of this invisible power, this invisible connection that we don't see, but that we really experience every day. So, yeah, good job.
Exactly.
That's being promoted. We're getting toward the end of the show. Any sort of last comments you want to make or share, teach, talk about?
Okay. So don't buy feathers anymore.
Know
that they are not humanely acquired. just do work locally, do things to, you know, anything you do, even the slightest thing, just smiling at a stranger can actually make a difference in the world. You know, just know that everything you do, every action you take has a result, and it makes a difference. So remember when you're out in the world to try and do things from a positive standpoint, because that, as you were saying, Gail, I mean, even our thoughts create energy and create action. So I find it important for me to continue through this lifetime to learn how to just think in a positive way and not get so negative and angry about things, because that's not going to help things. That's just adding to the problem. So that's my main advice, really. Just be really conscientious of your thoughts and your actions, because it all counts. It all counts towards a peaceful world.
Excellent. You know, a couple of things come to mind, and we do have time for this, so I want to bring it to the forefront. When you said don't buy feathers, it makes me think of, I have a neighbor who's actually an art teacher at one of the local high schools, and I'm thinking that to give a shout out to all the art teachers, if you will, that it could be an idea that they just ask their students to go around and notice if there's any feathers that have dropped on the ground, or if anyone has birds as pets, that they can collect and use those in the art classes, as opposed to obviously going down to, you know, Hobby Lobby, Michaels, whatever, and buying feathers. So we can get this word out
and
to the school.
And just start your own project.
It'd be great, too.
Yeah, and then, I mean, kids, they're our next hope. So if they are educating people about that and letting people know, then they can have people finding feathers for them as well, you know, just like me.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Or obviously they can give you a shout-out on Facebook at Feather Drop to find out more about if they could get some feathers. And I'm noticing in my office, I have feathers that I've collected over the years that have fallen from the sky, you know, and down into my yard or wherever I happen to be at my feet. I'll have to consider some of those and see what I want to do with those. Yeah, exactly. Donate them to you or make something of them for myself, whatever. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Rosemary, it's been a delight to have you on the Peace Brain Show. We didn't get to talk about your Earthship, but maybe in the last minute, talk about Earthships, just because that, again, is another way of being with Mother Nature. You actually built one, right?
Yeah, so I built one. My ex-partner and I built one in North Georgia, and we spent 6 years using all of our energy and money. And Earthship is something that is built into the earth, so it uses the thermal mass to insulate. And it has a very large roof, metal roof, that collects all of the water that's used in the home for everything, washing, bathing, drinking. It has a solar system so that all of the energy we use comes from the sun. And I just felt like in doing it, it was my part in helping Mother Earth and educating humanity that we can live in a way that works with the environment, and that's a direction we need to start going. So it was a huge accomplishment and a dream come true, and I'll never forget, you know, the years in that and the effort it took.
So I encourage everyone to go check out Earthships. It's I know we've talked about building them at zoos as examples, and even some of the buildings that are being built to make them as Earthships, or certainly wildlife sanctuaries where you are out in nature and not in an urban environment and need to be self-sufficient. So that's another way to be off the grid.
Right.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, again, thanks for being on the Peace Brain Show, and have fun in South Africa. That's going to be amazing. You'll have to keep us all informed.
Thank you, and thanks so much for having me, Gail. Yes, definitely. And thank you so much for your work with this show and all the work that you do.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a delight to learn more about the amazing people like yourself that are doing great things to create peace on Earth. So congratulations. Thanks.
Thanks.
So if you want to learn more about Rosemary Kimball, you can go to enrapturingentertainment.com or check out her Facebook group, Feather Drop. You can find it under Feather Drop, but the official title is Feather Drop for the Advocacy and Collection of Cruelty-Free Feathers. I know she's also on Instagram. She said she's the Rosemary Kimball with the birds, and she also is a distributor of CBD oil, and you can find out about that at simplycbdconcentrate.com. So, oh goodness, what a fun life, Rosemary. Thank you. So, everyone take a pause.
If you want to see the travels.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You can find me on Instagram. The Enrapturing Entertainment is on Instagram, and that's where you'll see all the travel.
Fantastic. We will keep apprised of your travels. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and maybe can follow in your footsteps. People can from that as well. So now, everyone, we're going to go into Peace Brain Meditation. So just take a breath. Just be present in your body, in your breath, in your spirit. And give yourself a grounding cord, which is, I like to envision a beam of light or maybe a tree trunk coming out of the base of my spine and going all the way down to the iron crystal core of Mother Earth and anchoring into her beautiful core. It's much like the third prong on that electrical outlet. So when energy comes your way, that's not yours, rather than burn out your circuits, you can just slough it off into Mother Earth to be recycled. Just put it down the grounding cord. So go ahead and put all the past and the future, your thoughts, down the grounding cord. Be here in the present moment. And be in tune with your body, with who you are. And I invite you to go into your sacred heart, that beautiful part behind your physical heart that is your sacred heart. This is where the divine resides within you, in your physical body. You are divine. This is your anchoring place, if you will. And to know that you are this beautiful being, you are this wonderful spirit in a physical body that is here to create joy, that is here to create harmony and grace on the planet. So I invite you to consider, what are your gifts and your talents, and what excites you, what makes your heart sing that you love to do? Just like Rosemary loves to be this animal activist and servant to the earth, spreading ways that we can be more in balance. What is your gift? What is your talent? What is your passion? And how can you bring it to actually be a part of creating a peaceful earth, a one that works in harmony and has that tolerance and that acceptance of each other, that understands that we are all connected, both biologically and energetically, and that we need to learn to get along, that we really are one species, we really are one human race, one collection of humanity on the earth, and that we are part of the animal kingdom. We are part of the minerals and the rocks and the water and the air. So how can you be of service? Think about this. And maybe the answer doesn't come to you right away, but I encourage you, invite you to consider that question and to give yourself time for those insights, that aha to come to you of, yes, I could do this. And whatever this is, to then put it forth out there that, yes, that's the next path, to take that step. Maybe it's just a few days locally being of service. Maybe it's a week when you're on vacation or over the holidays. Maybe it's a couple of months during your summer vacations, if you're a student or have those times off. Maybe it becomes a life career. Whatever resonates with you, you are here to make a difference. And you are making a difference. And you have so much capacity to do this. You are so loved. You are so connected. You are so supported. Feel it within your bones. Feel it within your heart. Know that you can do very easily, if you choose, what Rosemary is doing. You can create your heaven on earth. You can create your joy and know that you are helping those who are making a difference to team up. For it's not just working by yourself. It is working in teams and collaborations. That also brings great promise and great rewards. So take a breath. Pat yourself on the back. Give yourself a beautiful hug. And come back to your chair, wherever you are. Bring your awareness back to the room. And honor yourself. Know you are this powerful being who can create peace in your own self, in your family, in your community, in the world. Congratulations, and thanks for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today. I really appreciate it. And listening to all the wonderful stories and travelings of my guest, Rosemary Kimball. And you can find out more about Rosemary, again, if you go to enrapturingentertainment.com, or she's on Instagram as well, Rosemary Kimball, and on Facebook with Feather Drop about cruelty-free feathers. And be aware of, you know, picking up your own feathers and using them, donating to a school perhaps, or to artists that you know, or to Rosemary. And if you want to find out more about me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to our website, tourismforpeace.com, or you can email me at hello@peacebrain.org and check out these, you know, opting for peace and building your own peace park and bringing that little bit of nature into your life where we can actually have community dialogue and create solutions that work for all, that are win-win, to bring peace to our community and to solve those issues that need to be addressed. So, go forth and activate your peace brain, build your peace park, get on your World Peace Trails map, and tune in next time on the Peace Brain Show in 2 weeks. Many blessings. Namaste. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace plans for your business or organization, and her recently published book, Opt for Peace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 1 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.